In your book, you kind of make a distinction saying that you aren't a metalhead, but a metal enthusiast. Yeah. What do you kind of see as the difference between those two? Where does kind of the line, I guess, between those go?
Well, it's easy. I'm a punk.
So. So I can't be a metalhead. It's impossible. That's it.
Exactly. And, I always, what's interesting here is that, I'm out of the punk rock movement. I always played in punk bands, and I always wanted to write about punk music history in Quebec. And I never get around to do it because I always have these other projects that keep on popping up about metal, about hip hop, and about this and that. And someday I will write about punk rock. But what I realized is that not being a metalhead gives me just this little comfortable distance with the subject. So I know quite a lot about metal now. I knew quite a good share back then too, because in this town where I'm from, there was a punk rock scene, there was a metal scene, and often scenes were crossing paths with different bands. You'd have punk bands playing with metal bands, and also rap artists playing within those shows too, because it's a small community. So if you were into an alternative musical style, well, you'd kind of have to get along with each other. Otherwise, you'd always be fighting with people. So, that was an interesting place to grow up in, to actually get to know a lot about each scene. So I like to specify that I'm not a metalhead because, it gives me this comfortable distance. And as a journalist, I think it is very important to always have a distance with what you are talking about as much as possible. Although you really want to, get as much point of views, as much different point of views as you can, because you want to give an interesting portrait of the thing you're talking about. So either I'm talking about COVID-19 like I do daily on my radio show, because I have no other choice. Or either I'm talking about heavy metal music or hip hop music. The important thing is to talk with as much people as possible and get all those points, point of views. And that's what I did with the book.
I should preface this by saying I'm from the States. So I'm one of those imports here into Quebec.
Well, welcome, sir.
Thank you. But whenever I hear people kind of talk about the history of Quebec, I hear them always kind of talk about two basic things that kind of are essential to the identity of the province. And one is kind of the fact that they are kind of an island of French and French culture within the larger confines of English North America. And also, when we're talking about history, there's the idea of the Quiet Revolution and how that has affected. Do you think that these are kind of the largest factors in kind of how metal, at least the way I see it, is sort of rallied around here in Montreal and Quebec more than in other places?
Oh, yes. On so many levels, these things are really important. First of all, the whole French situation gives us a very tight link with Europe. Mm-hmm. And this link, I believe, brought us progressive music. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things. Although it was used huge in England, and most of the prog rock bands that we would have in Quebec and which became very popular here, like Genesis and Gentle Giant, who would tour Quebec, like a couple of small towns in Quebec before they would tour like Calgary or Edmonton or Vancouver. They would play Hull, they would play Sherbrooke, they would play Trois-Rivières, they would play Rimouski. It's kind of senseless in a way, like in 72 or early 70s, whatever. So the whole European vibe, is as something to do. But it's not, it is important, but it is not as important as the Quiet Revolution, because the Quiet Revolution brought us the whole public higher learning systems, so the colleges, the cégep, mm-hmm. and then the network of the Université du Québec. So you'd get these colleges and universities here and there all over the province where kids would learn about, well, you know, colleges were all about communism and socialism, yes, and revolution, the hippie days, and, you know, and it was all about the nationalist movement also in the early 70s. And although I'm not cool with the terrorism like the EFLQ and stuff like that, I believe Pacific affirmation of Quebec identity also happened through music. And I believe that was a very important movement. And progressive music became one of the most important cultural way of expressing a national feeling. So you'd get bands like, and you'd get basically any band that was in Quebec in the 70s add this progressive touch to their sound. And the link between the progressive sound of the nationalist thing is that it was all happening in the colleges, the cégep and the universities, because they had these showrooms, these halls where you could have shows, and kids in the cégep, they would organize shows in their cégeps, their colleges, and they'd get bands like Genesis or Gentle Giant to play, along with local bands like Manège, who were more in the classical side, like Ocho's, who were more in the art rock, glam rock side, or bands like, let's say, Harmonium, who were more into the folkish side of things. But what all these bands had in common was the progressive sound, the progressive structures, the progressive roots. So either you were commercial or really underground, you'd have this progressive thing. And you also had musical courses in university and cégep. So that really brought new musicians and better musicians on the scene. And people were... people really started being better musicians than they were before. But because before that, learning an instrument in Quebec was learning it through your family. You'd become a violoneux, you know, playing fiddle. Right. It was like fiddle music and stuff like that, which is all right. It was like that all over North America. But I believe it took a couple more years in Quebec to get out of that way of learning stuff, and before it became more institutionalized and then school institution way, if not sure if I'm putting that right in English, but anyways,
makes sense to me. So
okay,
you know,
try to make sense.
Well, obviously you can't write anything about metal and Quebec without mentioning Voivod, and I know that Michelle did the cover art for the book.
Yeah.
Would you, though, say that that Voivod is the most influential metal band in Quebec, or would you put your money on someone else if you were to be pressed?
Well, I would totally say that Voivod is the most important metal band, at least up until the early 90s. After that, it became some other bands came in and became more influential, maybe just as influential or more influential. I will be very honest with you. In the 90s, with the whole death metal thing, I know nothing about that. So I don't know who was influential. You know, when Cataclysm became big, when Cryptopsy became big, when Gorgoth became big, I know Voivod had some kind of influence on those bands. But then those bands also became influential on other bands. So it's just waves. And this is basically how I put it in the book. It's a chain, you know, it's a chain of evolution. It's a chain of influence. So you had in the 60s, a band called Les Houlops, who started out with a garage rock sound. They were singing in French and they were writing their own songs, and they inspired Ocho's in the 70s, and Ocho's inspired Voivod, and Voivod inspired bands like Oblivion, DBC, and Gorgoth. So you kind of have like this chain that opens up, and then at a certain point you can't really know how important Voivod is to any band in the late 90s, but they were immensely influential in the 80s, yes. And they also had, I believe, an international impact on different musicians. If you only think about a man like Jason Newsted, who mm-hmm. used to play bass with Metallica, he right. was a huge Voivod fan, and then he played with Voivod. I mean, that's kind of a very obvious influence, and he was playing with Flotsam and Jetsam.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it. And he was already a Voivod fan back then. So, and you see all those guys with Voivod t-shirts all over the place. Like either it's Lemmy or it's I don't know who else. There's this guy on Facebook who I love to follow. He's a real heavy metal Bible. His name is Bob Girard, and he keeps on posting photos of these metal legions with Voivod t-shirts, and I'm like, what? This guy knew Voivod? Like, oh, so that's cool. So yeah, I believe they had an international influence. Yes, they were not the biggest in international band, but they're kind of cultish in their own way.
I'm struck as someone who is from the States. It's International Women's Month now. Yep. And I've noticed when I go to shows, particularly in Montreal, it is way less white dude-ish than I'm used to. Is there a kind of precedent in Quebec that makes this female-friendly seems to be the more kind of focus on it? Is there like a precedent of that, or is that just something that's happened recently that I'm noticing?
Well, there were female-fronted bands in the 80s, like at the very beginning of metal. You had a couple of them. The most interesting one is Trop Féroce, like it means too fierce, basically. And their singer was called Ginette Féroce. And that's so cool, man. Like Ginette Fierce or something. Fierce Ginette, I don't know how to put it, but it's crazy. So they weren't that good, but they had the whole medieval, imagery linked to their whole thing. And they had a very cheap video clip with a song called Richard Cœur de Lion, Richard Lionheart, mm-hmm. maybe linked to some Anglican king, whatever. So, but they became cults because they had this kind of kitschy thing, kitschy image to their thing. But there were other female-fronted bands in the 80s, and there always were women in punk rock shows and metal shows. So, honestly, I couldn't compare with anywhere else because right. I haven't been to metal shows in the United States, but I can say that it was always usual to have many women around in any shows I would go. So yeah, I'm 38 now, and I began going to shows in around, I'd say, 1996. Yeah, I think that was my first show, and it was almost half and half.
Huh, interesting. That's half and half. See, those are numbers that I am not familiar with.
It's weird, eh? It's kind of weird for me to actually get to think about it because, all of my girlfriends, and I'm not talking about lovers, but, my friends,
right.
Were coming in big gangs. So all these girls were showing up, like 15 of them. It's just like, cool. Well, all right. Now we have a show. We have 15 people, and it's just one. It's just one gang, actually. So there's another gang and another one. And it was just, I don't know. They were coming to the shows and they were welcomed. And in the mosh pits, they were picked up like if they'd fall and stuff like that. So yeah, they were. And bands always had like, punk bands and metal bands often had like a song that was like, okay, now this one is for women to go in the pit. So men move aside and let women have fun so they can like go at their own rhythm, basically. Yeah, and in my town, it's still like that. It was always like the circle pits. So so that's why you can easily tell the man to step away. It's not just like this little pogo dancing thing at the front of the stage. It's the real circle pit thing up until 2020, not 2021, but because there's not so many shows.
not so many happening right now. Yeah. Well, you mentioned your book about hip hop that you wrote for Hip Hop in Montreal. I often will make the comparison between hip hop and metal and say mm-hmm. that they are very kindred spirits. And a lot of people will say that I am totally crazy for making such an assertion. But basically, I'm going to ask you to prove to them that I am right. because I often see them, like, they start around the same time. They're both kind of like fighting against a kind of larger established authority system that's in place. Both groups kind of view themselves as outsiders against everything else. Am I wrong in this assertion? Since you've written about both, I figure you can tell me.
I believe you're totally right. And there's one of the main things that both genres or styles had in common is tape trading. And that's a very important thing. I did not know that hip hop had a tape trading network around the world, or maybe North America. I don't know if it was all the way to Europe, but there were tapes being traded all over North America. I know that for sure. And I know that tape trading in the 80s for the metal scene was vital, but really vital. So this is these styles and genres had to organize in the same type of ways. So with either fanzines or tape trading, or, you know, putting together their own shows, renting their own rooms, not being accepted by, you know, mainstream medias, mainstream society, not being understood by their parents and stuff like that. But, and it's not just to hip hop and metal, but also to punk rock. I believe the whole DIY thing really is the common root of all those movements, because, at a certain point, you make it big and you don't do stuff yourself anymore. But it's always, for those three genres, it's really all based out of passion and a lot of teenage feelings, negative feelings towards society. I'm going to put it like that, like in a very very wide way of seeing it. But I believe there definitely are some similarities. And there's this very interesting place in Montreal where basically all cultures met, and it was at the Rising Sun. It was a bar where you'd get crossover shows, so you could get bands like DRI or the Diglo Abortions playing, as well as you could get Black Flag and the Dead Kennedys. And you'd also have reggae nights and people like DJ Flight, who is one of my main I don't want to say character, but one of the main people I interviewed for my book about hip hop. He would go to the Rising Sun often, either to attend reggae nights, or you would go there to just to attend punk rock, hardcore, or crossover shows. And there were racist skinheads there sometimes. And he would be, he's black, right? So you would have a lot of punk guys, you know, defending him and siding with him. And he ended up, you know, being implicated in an anti-fascist movement. So they had like this all-black movement, and they had like an Ligue Antifasciste Mondiale, like the worldwide anti-fascist league in the late 80s. It was linked to Berruyer Noir in France and Banlieue Rouge in Montreal. And it was all because there was a really important far right and neo-Nazi movement in Montreal happening, maybe elsewhere. So there was like also this answer to that, and it would get really not just rowdy, but you know, it was fights, and it was a war between kids. So you'd see rappers like Flight siding with punks against neo-Nazis. So there's definitely links there, because yes, there were fights against some ideologies.
Because we have an auto structure, set of fuzz, and you don't have a choice.